back out with an unpopular opinion. Tea is better than coffee. And today I'm going to spill the tea on the pod. We're going to talk about how I got broed in my YouTube comments, how posting regularly on Facebook has brought out the best and the worst of the Hike Like a Woman community. I'm going to share three things that I've stopped doing since the new year began and why I hopefully will never do them again. And I'll answer one question from our community about training for high altitude hikes. That's a lot. Let's do this. Hey, it's Rebecca, the founder of Hike Like a Woman. If you're new to the show, welcome. Lately, this podcast has consisted of interviews with women who are presenting at our upcoming virtual summit, May 8th through the 12th, but we are mixing it up a little bit. And on Tuesdays, you will continue to see interviews, but on Thursdays, it's a show, and I'm just going to talk about what's going on behind the scenes here at Hike Like a Woman. Let's chat about Facebook. We actually were just a Facebook page for a couple of years before we actually built a website, started blogging and doing all the things. So lately I've been trying to work hard on rebuilding our Facebook community. And I know this sounds silly because it's like Facebook, who's on Facebook? But you'd be surprised, a lot of people are still very active and engaged on Facebook. I've been putting a lot of time and effort into Instagram the last 4 years. I've taken Instagram classes, I've hired Instagram coaches, and Instagram just is not doing it for me. Like, Instagram is not reaching our community. In February, I was like, okay, my Instagram strategy is not working. Let's go back to our roots. Let's go back to Facebook. So I have been posting 4 times a day on Facebook. And I post things like memes, quotes, what's going on here at Hike Like a Woman. And then the final post of the day goes out at 5 p.m. Mountain Time every day. And it is a question designed to just get people talking and people engaging, not necessarily with me, but with each other. And in asking these open-ended questions the past month, I have forgotten how angry Facebook makes people. And some questions like, what's your biggest pet peeve in the outdoors? Or even questions about like, what apps do you use on your phone when you're hiking? Have gotten people really, really fired up. There was quite a big discussion about paper maps versus apps in the backcountry. There was a fight over dogs with dog owners who like hiking with their dogs off leash versus dog owners or people who think that dogs should always be leashed in the backcountry. And so these debates and discussions have been pretty wild. And sometimes I've even had to like step in and hide comments and remove people. I hate to do that, but I'm like, oh my gosh, why are people arguing about using maps versus using apps? Like, sometimes it just gets a little bit too salty. One conversation in particular about if you could hike with anyone dead or alive, who would you hike with? And that conversation turned into just a lot of women talking about hiking with their parents or their grandparents or their children. And it was just like a confirmation to me that it's really important to build those memories outdoors with people that we love, like our family, our friends. That's what everyone is going to remember about us someday. I also enjoyed a conversation that was sparked by a question that someone left on our pet peeve post about what is something other hikers do that's awesome. And people said things like, encourage my kids. People said things like, leave some trail magic, warn you if there's a problem ahead of the trail, say good morning, afternoon, evening, smile. Some people talked about having medical emergencies on the trails and people helping them out, sharing snacks, friendly conversation, leaving a clean and tidy campsite, helping out a fellow hiker who is struggling with gear or an injury, sharing information on trails. So many nice things that people are doing for each other in the backcountry. So conversations like that just like warm my heart. And it's so fun to watch our community engage like that online. The other conversation that I really enjoyed was about where people would go and where they would travel if they had no budget. And I'm going to be honest that I actually asked that question because right now I'm trying to get trip ideas to plan out our adventures in 2025. So thank you for all of the great information. Thanks for helping me do a whole bunch of trip research. That also leads me right into YouTube. And I love YouTube, but I'm having a hard time like coming up with creative video ideas and shooting video and editing video and posting video and then engaging with comments on our YouTube channel. So I'm working hard to get better at YouTube because I think it's really fun. But I went in yesterday and I hadn't looked at our YouTube comments in like 8 months. And there is this one YouTube video that I posted, and I'll leave it in the show notes. It's just a little YouTube short, and it's where I share an opinion about a backpack that I think is really annoying because it has three zippers. So it has two zippers across the top and then a zipper down the middle. And so it's just like I find three zippers to be completely wasteful and completely unnecessary and also annoying when I'm trying to use this backpack. So I actually just got rid of the backpack at a garage sale last summer because it was just too annoying. So I posted a video and I was like, a lot of people love this backpack and I can see why they love this backpack. I don't like this backpack because I think it has too many zippers. And I got broed in the comments, like three dudes let me know that I was not as smart as the backpack because you don't have to open all three zippers to access the backpack. You just have to open two zippers. So it was kind of funny. And then I was like, oh my gosh, people hate me on YouTube. But then I realized like three guys just had an issue with the fact that I didn't like this backpack. And then they made some comments about me not being very smart about the zippers. Anyway. Enough of this social media and YouTube conversation. I actually am going someplace with this. I really, really wish that I could meet all of you face-to-face, in person, at my favorite coffee shop, which is Sunshine Coffee here in beautiful Laramie, Wyoming. I wish that I could have a real-life conversation with all of you, but I can't. So I just want you to know that when you hop on to Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, I do read every comment and I read every single email that you send me and I read every single direct message, even the messages that are not very kind and even when the messages come from like dudes totally broing me. And I do love that part of our community because I wish I could have all of you join me for an in-person adventure. But to be honest, I can only host so many trips a year. And it's not really accessible for everyone in our community to like join me to climb Kilimanjaro or to go to Peru with me or to go to Iceland with me. But the one thing that we can do is communicate. So keep the messages coming, keep the emails coming, keep the comments coming. I enjoy that so much and I enjoy getting to know all of you just a little bit better. At the start of every year, I do an audit of the previous year and I sit down with my journal, with my husband, with my kids, with my vision board. And I just kind of review what happened in the previous year. I set some goals for the upcoming year and I choose a word of the year, a word to just kind of be my guiding star throughout the year. And in 2024, the word that I chose was momentum because the last couple months before the new year, I was feeling really good about Hike Like a Woman. I had a really good strategy. I had some good ideas. We're focusing on our virtual summit. We're focusing on in-person adventures. And I was feeling really good. And like I had a lot of momentum headed into the new year. And that's like the first time that has ever happened here at Hike Like a Woman. Usually I'm just flying by the seat of my pants and not able to really put Hike Like a Woman as my main focus because I've always had a full-time job and Hike Like a Woman has kind of been my side gig. But when I sold my outdoor retail store and then my ski shop in November, it was like, this is amazing. I can go all in on Hike Like a Woman for the first time in my entire life. And so I've been using this word momentum to kind of guide what I've been doing the first couple months of the year. And it has caused me to have some reflection and also to set some boundaries. I just want to share that with you so you get kind of a behind the scenes glimpse into how I'm running Hike Like a Woman and how I'm operating Hike Like a Woman and these boundaries that I've set for myself. And the first one is that I am no longer working on weekends. So before I owned my ski shop, I had a part-time job, and that job required me to work weekends. So it was like my husband was in school all day on weekdays, and then on the weekends we would just pass the kids over to the other parent. And so I worked a lot of weekends. And then once I bought my shop, of course, so Thursday through Monday were really big days at work. And so I worked every single weekend. And then when you own your small own small business, it's not like you're working 9 to 5. It's work a little bit before work, go to work all day, come home, work a little bit more and go to bed. And so just working myself into exhaustion. And so I have decided that with Hike Like a Woman, I work Monday through Friday and I do not work on weekends unless I have time budgeted in my schedule to work on weekends. Like this past Sunday, I was a little bit behind and we're getting ready to go out on spring break and go on a big family adventure. And so I did work a little bit this past Sunday, but it was okay because it was budgeted. Like that was time that I had talked to my family. And that was time when I had said, hey, I got to get some work done. But I don't work on weekends anymore. And I think that's that has been a huge change for me because Hike Like a Woman was my nights and weekends kind of gig. And the other thing I've been doing is looking at our trip schedule. And I get emails and messages all the time with women saying, like, I want to go on a trip with you in July, or I want to go on a trip with you in June or in August. And the truth is, I would love to be able to offer guided trips all summer long, but I'm at this age where my oldest is 12 and my youngest is 10, and I'm realizing I only have so many summers before they're getting jobs and moving out of the house and doing their own thing. And so I really want to protect the summers that I have left with my children. And so I've decided that I will guide the first 2 weeks in June and the last 2 weeks in August, but I want a good solid 8 weeks in the middle of the summer that is just family time and just time for family adventures or just hanging out around the house with my family. And so if you're disappointed that we aren't guiding trips in like the heat of the summer, know that that's why, because I have chosen to spend that time with my family. And I think once you understand why, then it makes it a little bit. And so that's the why. And there's a lot of really great organizations like mine who are running trips in the summer. So I would encourage you to seek out one of those other groups, or to join us on a trip at the very beginning of the summer or the very end of the summer. Finally, the third thing that I'm doing is I used to pitch and promote a lot of products, a lot of outdoor gear, a lot of clothing. A lot of brands would give me free stuff, or they would pay me and give me free stuff to test. And the truth is, I thought I was being really honest with all of these gear reviews and brand partnerships that I've done in the past, but I've realized in going and looking at some of our previous content that I actually have a really hard time being honest with gear reviews for gear that I've gotten for free and gear that a company has paid me to promote. And so I've just decided that I am no longer going to do gear reviews and I'm no longer going to do brand partnerships, because I don't think it's fair to you if I get a free jacket and I say, oh, I love this jacket so much, and then I wear it for a year and then it falls apart. I don't feel like that is being authentic and fair. And plus, I don't really enjoy doing gear reviews and brand partnerships. It takes a lot of time. And the juice isn't worth the squeeze. So I'm not doing brand partnerships anymore. The one thing that I'm doing, if you're a brand out there and you're listening to this show, is we are doing sponsors for our virtual summit, but that sponsorship does not involve any gear reviews. It's you pay to play, and then you donate some door prizes to women who join us for our summit. So it's a completely different model, and it doesn't require me to have to test a product and then hope that the product that I just said that I loved and that I just recommended doesn't fall apart. So that is where we're headed with product reviews. So quick recap, I don't work weekends. So if you reach out to me on social media on weekends, I'm not going to respond. I'm not doing trips in the middle of the summer, beginning of the summer and end of the summer, but my family's coming first in the middle of the summer, and that's just how I operate. And no more brand partnerships, except for summit sponsors. I think it's important for you to know and for me to be transparent about what's going on behind the scenes here. And finally, before we go, I have a question from our community that we're going to roll right into. I asked Google how to prepare for high altitude hiking when you live at a low altitude. And this is what Google told me. Drink water, eat protein and carbs, ascend slowly, and stay home because hiking at altitude really sucks. For real though, I'm Rebecca and welcome to today's show. It's a Q&A show and you're in luck because you have questions and I have answers. Or I like to think that I do. Karen asks, how can I effectively prepare for hikes in areas at higher altitudes than where you typically live and have access to hike in? I am on the East Coast, not close to hiking opportunities much above sea level, yet have two hiking trips planned this summer out west with some significant, to me, elevation gains. How do I come up with a personalized game plan to train at low elevations for hiking at high elevations? Or know that the game plan in place will effectively prepare me. I have been researching and know there's a ton of information on the internet, but that is the problem. How to narrow down the information and develop a personalized game plan for me. Karen, this is such a great question, and it's a question that a lot of women who join me on guided trips have. So I'm excited to talk about this today. First, a disclaimer, I live at 7,200 feet. Yeah, 7,200, 7,200 feet. Yeah, 7,200 feet. And I am not an expert at altitude training for hiking. I would say that as a guide and as someone who lives in a high altitude area, I'm pretty good at helping our clients feel good when they're at altitude, but I am a huge fan of Ian Taylor Trekking. I will link up to all of his stuff below in the show notes. I found a really interesting article on his website where he talks about this exact thing. And in this article, he shares a few things about training for altitude hikes that I had honestly never considered. And I'm going to share just a few. First, he says that if you were going on a big high altitude expedition, similar to what we're going to be doing when we're climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, very similar to what we're going to be doing when we are trekking in Peru in October, Ian mentions that it's really important to go on a trip like this with a guiding company who has an altitude plan in place. So guiding companies that do these high altitude routes over and over and over again and have really good systems and processes to make sure that they are going up at a pace and that they're camping in places where their clients can acclimate appropriately. And if you think about it, when we hire a guide to take us on an expedition, those guides want us to be successful. So it's important to know who your guiding company is and what route they are going to be taking you on. He also talks about genetics. There's not a whole lot we can do about that. It's really luck of the draw. This article also mentions increasing your VO2 max. Really, your VO2 max is the maximum amount of oxygen that your body can consume and utilize during intense exercise. Another thing that is mentioned in this article is training with double the load that you'll be carrying
on your trip. I always thought it was just important to carry the load, but it is interesting to think about carrying double the load. And I don't know if that means that when you get to half the load or the load you were originally going to carry on the trek, that it's going to just feel so much lighter, you're going to feel so much better, or if the double the load kind of represents the fatigue that your body is going to be feeling at these really high elevations. But you know, in 95 days, I will be starting my trek to climb Kilimanjaro, so I'm going to definitely increase the load that I currently carry when I'm out training. He also mentions things like being light and lean. Well, that's obvious, but also really difficult to do, especially for those of us who are middle-aged women who may have had some health problems or some injuries and were a bit deconditioned and were trying to get back at it. But still, it's a worthwhile goal. He talks a lot about hill training and being able to climb uphill for long, long, long periods of time, checking in with a doctor to consider a prescription for a drug like Dymox that can really help you feel better at altitude.
And it's really interesting to think about because we don't know how altitude is going to make us feel. We don't know if we're going to be sick or healthy at altitude until we actually get to a high altitude area. There's really no way to predict this.
And I will personally say that sometimes I can feel pretty good at 14,000 feet, but sometimes I can also feel like shit at 14,000 feet. And a lot of it has to do with how well I'm eating, how well I'm drinking, how well I'm resting, and how physically fit I am. And that's not to say that if you're like some amazing athletic specimen, you're not gonna feel the effects of altitude sickness, because you still might. Like, there is no guarantee that the fittest person on earth is gonna feel really good at 19,000 feet. Like, that is not guaranteed whatsoever. But there are things we can do, eating, drinking, and training, to really help minimize those effects of altitude, even when you're coming from a low elevation area. I have found that in my life, if I expect something negative or bad to happen, it does. And I've also found that sometimes the anticipation of something happening is enough to kind of give me a little bit of anxiety and make my stomach hurt and make me just kind of freak out a little bit about it. And I think altitude is one of those things too. So it's like, you can do all this stuff at home before you go to the high altitude area, but if you spend all this time worrying and thinking about it and wondering how you're going to perform, sometimes we can get in our own heads there. Sometimes we can psych ourselves out before the big hike by being so preoccupied or so worried about altitude. And I would say it's like anything in life, like do the work and then just let it be. So to prepare to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and I'll talk about this in a video later, what I'm doing is I am walking a ton. I have started a strength and conditioning program. It's designed for people who are deconditioned and overweight, because I really want to just start with the basics. And I'll post more information about the training program that I'm following. I'm also working a lot on balance.
It's something that I'm working on a daily basis, and I've actually put together a 5-minute balance sequence. It's just a series of little balance drills that I do every single day. It takes 5 minutes. It's super easy, but I can tell a big difference in my balance. And if you want me to share that with you, leave a comment below so that I know it's something you're interested in.
I'm trying to eat really good, healthy food, drink a lot of water, and I'm going to be talking to my doctor about a prescription for Dymox, because I've had cancer. I've made my peace with Big Pharma, and I really don't want altitude sickness to take me out of the game if it doesn't have to. So here's the deal. It's fun answering your questions. I love it. And if you have a question that you want me to answer on our next Q&A show, we're going to try to do this once a month. All you got to do is send me an email, hikelikeawoman@hikelikeawoman.com, and I will answer your questions right here. But I'm always here to help you get outside and to help make your outdoor adventures fun, safe, and memorable. So hi@hikelikeawoman, that's how you can reach me, or you can send me a DM over Instagram or Facebook. That's kind of where I hang out these days.
Next week, we're going to be talking about training to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, mental toughness and resilience, and answering a question about hiking with kids. So you're not going to want to miss it. So make sure you subscribe to the pod wherever you're listening. And if you like the show, make sure you tell your friends about it. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time.